Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a valley that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. This is episode number 316 for those of you keeping track. And this is Stephen Zimmer broadcasting to you live out of Lexington, Kentucky. Fine evening in the Bluegrass State right now, and we are going to be branching out to other states tonight with our great co-host, the one, the only, the Dark One, Daniel Dark. And, of course, joining us in just a few minutes, the lovely, the vivacious, the wonderful Holly Marie Phillippe. So, hello, Daniel. Show is underway.
We're ready to rock and roll again.
Yes, we are, and we have quite the rock and roll guest coming in just shortly, which is going to be absolutely fantastic and very excited about that. And so, yeah, we're going to be talking about all kinds of stuff tonight. But first of all, yeah, this is the first time I've caught up with you in a week. Yes, it's the last Star Chamber show. So what's been happening in the dark style world?
Doing my TV show and staying alive. That's two main things. Running a business every day.
Well, I wish I had the disco hit "Staying Alive" to cue right now, but we don't have one of those licenses, unfortunately. I know we spare no expense for the show, but that is one thing that we did not get yet. So, otherwise, I'd play for you that great Bee Gees tune, "Staying Alive." Because yeah, we're glad about that. And yes, running a business is something that's day in day out, and small business obviously usually a 7-day-a-week job. So yeah, you know I understand. And but you're always up to some cool adventures. The TV show is underway and. And, yeah, great things happening. So,
quick question for you. Were you able to take advantage of that little thing that I sent you?
Not just yet. But I will. It's been a bit of whirlwind because last week was a short week for us because I had to travel to Indiana for a signing event last Friday at Roxy's Vivi. I talked about that in the show last week. And that turned out really good, actually. I mean, the Roxy's Vivi is a gorgeous venue. I mean, it is kind of like an old school hunting lodge and just kind of, little Victorian touches here and there. I mean, just a beautiful, just absolutely beautiful place. And Roxy was just such a good host to us, and Holly and I had a great time. And yeah, definitely want to give a shout out to Not That Iconic, and of course the VV, Curiosities Emporium out there. I mean, it's just a great antique store. It's just right across the road almost from Roxy's, and just awesome. Joe Fryman, Timothy Shackelford, just a great evening. We sold a lot of books. I mean, the turnout was fantastic, and it was every way you look at it, it was a really, really good event. And, we were treated so well. And, so it was great. But yeah, we did the road thing and came back on Saturday. And, so it's been a lot of stuff's been compacted into, cause I had a pretty heavy editing schedule going on, and among other things, obviously, with the constant work for Imaginary M and the press. So, yeah, it's been a scramble to keep up. I'm actually, if I sound a little nasally tonight, I apologize. Yeah, I'm fighting off a bug, but I wasn't going to miss the show. But it's been a whirlwind.
I sent you is very time sensitive, so you need to get on that if you can.
I will. I definitely will. But it's just been a whirlwind, like I said. And on that note, we have had some pretty cool Imaginarium news. I mean, yes, it's always good to report that when I finish editing projects and they go well, that happened. But more interest to the listeners. Yeah, we added a couple of great sponsors. One relates to our guest tonight, and of course that we added Three Ravens Publishing and as an official sponsor of Imaginarium, and great publishing house that was founded in 2019 and primarily focuses on science fiction and fantasy. And they're aboard. And then also, and this was announced today, in fact, and that was Renmelian has been announced as an official sponsor. And Renmelian will be coming on the show. I believe it's the 18th that Renmelian will be on the show with us. And she, of course, you know her probably. She sponsored a lot of Star Chamber shows as well, which we're grateful for, but she's officially a full sponsor of Imaginarium, and she does it all. I mean, I'm just blown away, but just how talented she is. She does everything well, too, I might say, too. Yeah, it's not just, she's got her hands in a lot of different areas. She is good at all of them, but she's an author, editor, publisher, screenwriter, game designer, an artist, for the last couple of years, she's been teaching kindergarten through 12th grade classes online with all kinds of stuff like math illustration, writing, and digital art. But she works as a consultant on creative projects and just a really, really super cool person. And she leads the Kentucky Browncoats. Those of you that are Firefly Serenity fans know what that is, of course. And the Browncoats also will be at Imaginarium 2022. But Renmelian, just came aboard as a sponsor. So that's pretty exciting. And then we also had announced that award-winning filmmaker Herschel Zond came aboard as a spotlighted guest. And he's an absolutely superb, just knows his stuff, filmmaker, screenwriter, actor, and also a musician. I mean, like he's done so many projects. I mean, it'd be impossible to run through them all here, but he's done. He's shot, directed, produced for like national companies like Hallmark, Inside Edition, Investigation Discovery, Forbes, Time, Bravo TV. I mean, he's worked with like really top level stuff, and he's also got a debut feature documentary, Game Train, which is playing in theaters nationwide. So, yeah, it's really cool to be able to announce Herschel Zond as a spotlighted guest at Imaginarium. And it's been a busy time indeed.
What does it take to become a sponsor for Imaginarium?
Well, glad you asked. And Holly has joined us, so she'll pipe in here in a minute on this. But we actually have several levels, ranging from of course some really pretty heavy levels down to individual patron sponsorships. And there's a spot on the Imaginarium site, entertheimaginarium.com, where it says, become a 2022 sponsor. It's one of the menu choices. So just click on that, and it will take you to the page. It will show you about seven different options. And our sponsorships really, you look at events, and they're incredibly affordable. Because, individuals take your levels.
The perks that come with each one.
Yeah, $50 for the patron one, and then the first few rungs of those are just a few hundred dollars. To become a full official sponsor of Imaginarium, they're really not that much in terms of how sponsorships usually are priced in other larger events, but they help make all the difference in the world for us. And we're definitely very grateful. In the last week, we had not just one but two new ones with Three Ravens Publishing and with Renmelian. So look under Become a 2022 Sponsor on the entertheimaginarium.com website, and you can find out all about it and become one today. It's really easy. So Holly, turn up your mic or speak up just a little bit, but as I heard you there, and welcome.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Better.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I turned it up.
Hello, Holly.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
All right.
Good, good. We're all
I didn't made it on time. Let me tell you. I've had a crappy day anyway, but I got ready to call in and put my headphones on. I went to grab my earbuds. Somehow or another, I had them tangled 10 ways of 7. It was terrible. They were so tangled. I had to sit here and untangle for like 5 minutes. They were a mess. I don't know how I managed that one, but it is me we're talking about. So.
It's okay. Daniel and I were chit-chatting about a few cool things, and we were updating everybody on some of the latest Imaginarium news with Herschel and, you know, our new sponsors and everything like that. And also, I should mention Seven Star Press. We also had Rose Marie Macario's brand new Magic of the Chosen Ones book, The Fate of the Realm, just went on pre-order on Kindle for the Kindle edition. Print and Kindle and all the other versions will be available on June 21st. Thought I would pass that along. Of course, Rose has hosted several other shows here, and always lovely to have her aboard with us. And yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to as well. But let me go ahead and get. We do have chat room is open, so it is working tonight. So yeah, please do log in. But I will go ahead and give recognition to our two sponsors tonight. Ren Garcia and the awesome Sandy Lender, the one also known as the Genre Blender. So let me give you a little bit about Ren here, and then we're going to go over to Sandy's spot. So here comes Ren with the big question.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Take it, Daniel. Answer the question. You get to be first this week.
I am normal enough for you, Ren. I am always normal.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
And we are yes. Definitely weird enough.
And we're definitely weird enough on our end, so yes. that's wonderful. That's wonderful. So that's great. And that will go over as I got to stop laughing because I don't want to laugh over Sandy's spot, but I just love that question. But yes, this is Sandy Lender, this Genre Blender, and give this one some attention because the book she's talking about is absolutely outstanding. Definitely worth picking up a copy. Here's Sandy Lender.
Who puts a vampire in charge of a romantic bed and breakfast? Author Sandy Lender does. But the dashing Caleb O'Dan has more good sense than his author, and he delegates all the party planning. This lets him concentrate on protecting his fairy love interest from nasty trolls. Order Sandy's latest vampire novel, My Fairy Valentine, for a paranormal sweet romance laced with horror and mystery amid a Colorado mountain love boat cast. Yep, you heard all that. My Fairy Valentine is available now from Sandy Lender. Come on back to the Rose Chateau and fall in love with vampires again.
Thank you, Sandy. That was absolutely awesome. And we do have our guest is in queue, so I'm not going to wait to bring tonight's guest on. I've been looking forward to this one for quite a while. Very intriguing guest that we have on tonight for you. This is going to be a gem. I've had a run of some really good shows lately, and tonight will be no exception, because tonight's guest in a previous lifetime was actually an F-15 mechanic and staff sergeant in the U.S. Air Force. Now, if that isn't cool enough, yes, he is a true Renaissance man, and we're going to get into all that as we tell you all about his wild and crazy world tonight. But pertinent to the topic of the show, he is a writer, and he is also an editor and also a publisher. And and as far as his writing goes, he writes science fiction, fantasy, and post-apocalyptic fiction. And he is also the lead publisher with Three Ravens Publishing. And so with no further ado, we are going to go ahead and bring aboard to the Star Chamber Show for the very first time, the one, the only, the man himself, William Joseph Roberts. And William, your mic is on. Welcome to the show.
How you guys doing tonight?
Rocking and rolling.
Oh, great to talk to you. Been looking forward to it all day.
Are you sure you're ready to talk to me? Dude, you have no idea what you're getting ready to unleash, because I've been chugging coffee for like the last hour, and the mind squirrels have been running rampant already, and I haven't got my word count in for the day. So, you know, it's going to be one of those nights.
Hey, that's what we're here for. This is talk radio, so you just talk on, honey.
Well, I'm a little envious because Holly always gets to talk with you on a regular basis, and I always get to hear about how cool you are, how awesome you are, and of course, you know, very grateful, you know, when you came aboard Three Ravens Publishing as one of our sponsors of the Imaginarium. I gotta of course tell that, and we mentioned that early in the introduction. But now tonight, finally, we get to talk, which is nice, I'm definitely going to expect a little review of that concert you just went to, because yes, it turns out I get to talk to somebody that shares my taste in music, which is always a welcome thing.
Okay. I've been a Megadeth fan for decades, and you know, it's one of those, Dave's 61, 62, and he's on tour. I don't know how many more tours the old man's got in him. Because, okay, we got Megadeth's going to be close. I got to go see him. And Lamb
you
of
come
God.
To Nashville?
Yeah, I come up to Nashville. Lamb of God performed the show that I wanted to see. Oh, my dear God, their stage show, their presence. I was actually writing a scene for the novel that I'm working on now while at the concert, because I'm like, okay, I got to pull my phone out. I'm typing. Because, you know, Mind Squirrels just went stupid and decided, hey, we need to write right now. Megadeth got up there, and it was good. But, you know, there were parts that Dave wasn't doing all the lead parts anymore. You know, he didn't do the lead on Hangar 18, which is, you know, between Hangar 18 and Holy Wars, those are my two favorites. And, That was kind of a little bit of a letdown, but I still got to see Dave on stage. And, you know, we got to see Grandpa Dave, which was kind of cool, because he stopped the concert and told the security guy, who was being a bit of an ass, to piss off and go away and let everybody have a good time, or he was going to have him removed. And then they went back to doing the concert.
Wow. Very nice.
But In Flames, that was a good one. Trivium, that was okay. The stage show wasn't as good as In Flames, but, you know, the lead singer is also the lead guitarist, and he kind of just moved from mic to mic. But Lamb of God, oh, my God. I'm actually kind of looking at Avatar. Was it Avatar, OTEP, and there was another one that's going to be at Knoxville. And I'm seriously deciding whether I want to go to that one or not, because right now it's looking like it's just going to be me, but it's Avatar and OTEP. So,
nice. Oh, it just sounds great. I'm a lifetime Megadeth fan, and, yeah, I came aboard with them during the Peace Cells album when that was out. Aboard with Megadeth and in my earlier years. And as far as Lamb of God, I've been aboard of them since the second album, and also love In Flames and Trivium. So when I saw that lineup, I was like, wow.
Yeah. Well,
that's a night to remember.
I've already got my tickets here in Chattanooga. They were $20 a pop, but it's War, Goat War, Necro Goblin Con, and the Native Howl. It's like $20 a
night.
Yeah, we're doing this thing. And my daughter.
$20. That's like 1990s pricing.
There was some special going on. But, you know, my daughter, she's like, Squar's coming? Like, yeah, we gotta go. Oh. Okay, it's sold. Cool. Let's do this.
Yeah, I've been itching to, and I know retro gaming is something you like, because you had that great post when you took your family to that retro arcade, I guess you found in Nashville.
God.
That was all the old school
that
video
was awesome,
games. But,
and
yeah.
Well,
I mentioned. But I mentioned just because every time
that
I'm
was so much
I'm
fun.
Still on a quest to find Beavis and Butthead Super NES game and get a copy of that in to because the quest in that game was to go to a GWAR concert. I need to play that again. I missed that. That was so fun.
I don't even remember. Let's see,
Super Nintendo
playing that
Beavis
one.
And Butthead game, and the whole quest of the entire game is to get to a GWAR concert. Look it up.
I don't remember playing that one.
Great game. I played it late 90s and then never again. And I every time I hear about GWAR, I think of that game and I need wanting to get a copy of that.
Now, okay, I don't know how much digging you did. How much PC gaming did you do back in the day?
A fair amount back in the day. I mainly played RTS, like strategy games and stuff. But, yeah.
Okay, did you ever play Starflight?
No, I did not.
Okay, well, it was the very first open sandbox video game ever. Space Opera, you know, they even had a mock-up of the Enterprise in there just as a shits and giggles thing, and you couldn't interact with it, but it was there. But I played so much of that game, and that influenced a lot of my first novel and stuff. But
nice.
Something for all the authors out there. Never be afraid to ask a freaking question, because I tracked down the IP holder for the old Starflight IP video game, and I got permission to write in the universe, and we created an anthology from that. And, you know, I got to play in something that I loved and played so many freaking hours of.
Nice.
It was just surreal, you know?
That is cool. That is really
that
cool.
Is. Yeah.
Yeah, it's neat when you can go back and, you know, revisit that. And yeah, it just brings up so many memories, you know. It's like, wow.
Oh, yeah.
That was so fun back in the day, you know.
I went and downloaded the game from Steam, and it was like $2. Like, okay, cool. And here we go. We're playing it again. And, you know, I was right back into the old thing. I remembered the original coordinates I used to go to so I could do some mining to get some cash so I could upgrade the ship. And I had to pull myself away from it because I was getting sucked in again.
Oh yeah, we love the awesome retro gaming. We got several systems, and yeah, it's fun. I'm a big Tetris nut. I love Tetris. I can play that forever.
I still have my original ColecoVision console, 1983 vintage. Still works great. Still in great shape.
With a 2600 adapter and all that good stuff, and we got a and a Retron.
How far are you guys from Nashville? Because that place, that arcade is so worth going to.
Yeah, Daniel's close to you, but we're about a little over 3 hours away. Yeah, not too bad.
Oh, that's
Daniel's
not bad.
A hop, skip, and a jump.
Mm-hmm. I was there today.
Daniel? Oh, you were there today, see?
Yeah, that even at a three-hour jaunt, I mean, it's 2.5 hours for us to get up to Nashville. And just doing a day trip. Mm-hmm. That was so worth it. You go up there, you get up there early, you have a little brunch, play for 4 or 5 hours, and then have dinner and head back out, you know? So it was this perfect time and get away from the house and do something.
Yeah, your adventures are fantastic. And yeah, Holly always shows me your TikTok videos and this and that. And so I've kept up on you, even though we haven't talked directly. But yeah, you're a popular subject in our household. But
oh, dear God.
You do all the cool stuff. You do all the cool stuff.
I get the gas regulator and I get the forge running and I get the boys out there. We're going to make some stuff.
Heck yeah.
Nice. Heck yeah. Yeah, you got it.
You got the chicken. I like the chicken updates too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those are great. Definitely get into your world as far as writing, publishing, and everything else. And I'm guessing that Three Ravens Publishing – the Three Ravens are you, R.J. Layden, and Benjamin Tyler Smith. Is that how the name came? Or where did the name come about? Yeah, I was curious about that.
Originally, it was kind of like, okay, it had to be three, just because the three of us. And we kept tossing around different ideas of different animals and things and stuff like that, and it kind of landed on Three Ravens. And my artist at the time, he's the guy that did up the cover for Flux Runners. I tossed the idea at him. Hey, we're looking at something like this. You got anything just kind of laying around you can slap together to help us to build the idea? And then that's when that kind of three-headed raven with the spread wings showed up, and it's like,
yes.
Oh my God, that's perfect. We're done.
Yeah, made Holly's day. The ravens are her favorites, so we've got two that live in our backyard.
It.
So yeah, we love ravens.
We do. That comes
and now I'm waiting to see if the three of you dress up in bird suits for the costume contest at Imaginarium. Now you're gonna come in raven outfits. That'll be.
Well, if I do that, nobody's gonna be able to find me for the Hillbilly Bingo game.
That's true. But you guys have been at it a few years now. As far as the gist I get is that you focus mainly on speculative fiction, but you're open to most categories. And, give us a picture of your catalog at the moment and author family, if you would.
We're open to most stuff. I'm even working on a nonfiction thing for a veterans PTSD charity. But
nice.
The main thing that it comes down to is tell me a good story. Take me on an adventure. You know, the one thing that I will absolutely never publish, and I don't care how good your writing is or what your name might even be, but if it comes anywhere near message fiction, I'm not going to touch it because I don't want to deal with it. You know? I want you to tell me a story and take me on an adventure because I want to escape.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, we focus on sci-fi fantasy, really looking at the catalog of what we have and what's coming up. We're really a fantasy publishing house. Urban fantasy, epic fantasy, the JTF series, it's military fantasy. And, that one, I'm working on edits for the latest anthology on that. I'm actually working on the modern novel for the series, and JTF. I'm getting ready to push really hard this year. It's just turning into a fun series that you can play in all these historical moments because we have the JTF legacy side, which is everything from modern day back. So, you know, you got all these historical events that you can actually tie into and, you know, something happened, but you don't know that there was actually a supernatural event going on that, you know, that attack was to cover up or something like that, you know, kind of wrapping into things like that, actual conflicts and stuff.
Right.
I actually wrote the first novel in the series called Widowmakers, World War II, primarily focused around a crew chief who I ended up tying into my own backstory. The 2nd Pursuit Squadron was flying sorties in P-61s out of northern France during World War II, just shortly after the Normandy invasion. My last duty squadron was the 2nd Fighter Squadron, which was, you know, the modern version of that. So, my character was a crew chief working on those planes. And they were chasing gremlins, World War II aircraft gremlins. What can go wrong here?
Nice. Yeah.
And, you know, just had fun doing it. The second book is Sea Serpent by John Worth. Yeah, John S. Worth. Had to think for a second. Third one in the series is Witch Hunt by Casey Moores, which, Sea Serpent is kind of Desert Storm up to the USS Cole bombing time frame, so basically the 90s. Witch Hunt takes place during the Civil War. And the next one coming out is High Hopes by John Olson. Crap, I have to look back. My mind is not working tonight. But it's World War One. World War One air crews dealing with imps. So similar to Widowmakers, but different because he picked a different creature.
Right. And I have listened to some of that audiobook. I just want to type in here. I have listened to some of it.
Oh, wait,
I got off track. I will get it finished and get your review, But I was listening to it when I didn't have to be working on schedules. Now I'm working on people's schedules and I have to think. So.
Right.
So when I'm done with that, then I will listen to the rest. But if I'm telling you, those creatures are freaking creepy, and you really draw the people into the story. It's fantastic. Yeah, I definitely will want to read, you know, further on in this series. But yeah, you've got me, that's for sure. I really enjoy those creatures. Very creepy.
Yeah.
Well, now, if you want to see a little bit more with them.
Yeah, you played that in the office for me, Holly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
If you want to see some more of those creatures, the anthology that's coming up, one of the stories actually has them in it.
Ooh.
And,
nice.
Well, there's actually going to be two Widowmaker stories technically in that anthology, because there's Widowmaker's team members in two of them. You know, one's mine, but the other one's going to be somebody else's. But, you know, the stories that we're getting in for that anthology, you know, it's bringing in even more stuff. We got some Korea War era stuff. We got a Revolutionary War era stuff.
Nice.
We got one more like Iran-Contra time frame, you know, in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're pulling in different time frames, different periods, different outlooks when the military is in operation at those time frames. So, you know, and that's the fun of it. Now, myself and Jason Cordova are working on stuff for the modern JTF, and it's going to have a different feel. It's going to be more of an action thriller type setup versus historical fiction. Think the Shane Schofield series by Matthew Riley, or some of the stuff that Jonathan Mayberry does, you know, in that type of storyline. But putting it in more modern setting with modern day operators and modern gear, with no real disclosed time frame, so that we can just keep playing in it.
Mm-hmm.
Have you thought about with your planes having one of them having it being invaded with Will-O-Wisp?
Yes. That's actually jotted down someplace. God, I have so much stuff in the slush pile. The scene that I just wrote out the other day actually has Jumpin' Jess from the first Widowmaker's novel in it, but it's more modern. I think we're kind of shooting for like 2015, 2016 for the time frame of the modern stuff. But Jumpin' Jess is in the museum at that point.
Good.
And for anybody that doesn't know who Jumpin' Jess is, she is the aircraft from Widowmakers. Kind of the equivalent of the Millennium Falcon, you know.
You got to name them. Yeah, got to name them.
Yep, absolutely.
Yep, people,
and
they name planes, they name ships. You know, you got to give them a name.
Yeah.
And I was about to fall off my chair because you just brought up a name of a writer that I absolutely love, and I did not realize guys are working together. Jason Cordova, it's got to be the same guy, and yeah, I had interacted and with him for a few years when my first few years after we launched Seven Star Press and everything. And yeah, it's awesome to hear his name pop up tonight. That is great.
Yep.
Yeah, he is so talented. He is
Jason
very
Cordova,
talented.
Right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that is.
Which, you know, he's working for Bain now.
Yeah. Awesome.
You know,
that's
freaking awesome. But yeah, Jason's on board. He's working on a set of novels for the modern stuff. He's got a short story in this anthology. Jason's good people, man. He really is.
Oh, yeah. Hope he's listening. Hey, Jason. He's out there. Oh, man, that is great. Yeah, that is too good. But, yeah, it sounds like you had a really good shared world kind of project growing from what I can tell here.
Yeah, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've got three other novels in the wings that we haven't got to yet just because of life and, you know, we have a limited editing crew, you know, but life gets in the way. So it goes as we can. You know, I understand what you were saying earlier on, as you were coming on, man. I mean, between the day job, publishing, and then trying to write in between, and then still got to have family time and all that, it is hard to balance and find that work-life balance when you add so much extra there.
Yep.
You know, and for anybody out there that's listening, and, you know, the younger authors and all, you got to find the balance. You can't just focus in and go gangbusters on one thing, right? Because something else is going to fall apart on you. And it really is. I mean, I can hyper-focus on stuff, and that's gotten me into trouble more than a few times. But you got to learn to rein yourself back as much as you can. Yep. So that you can do the other important things. You know, you don't want to be constantly working and all of a sudden the kids are growing and out the door.
Right. And life has passed you by.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know,
you got to find you have to find balance, and
right,
if you're mentally not well and too stressed, then your work's going to show that. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. And you know, your ideas aren't going to flow, and if you're forcing it, you know, everyone knows how it is when you force something versus when it's just flowing out your head and you got brain puke going down, but it's good. You know, there's a whole different feel to that writing when you do that. And but you know, that's one of the many reasons why I just bought a forge. I was going to build a forge, and once I priced out the parts and everything for it, and you know, I was like, okay, it's going to take me a couple hours. I'm going to have to borrow my buddy's welder, and I can put it all together. I was like, well, how much does it just cost to buy one of these things? It's like $300. But okay. And my mother-in-law, she's always wanting to spoil the kids, so she went ahead and just bought it. And lo and behold, you know, it was a cheap Chinese setup, mostly. And the regulator had a fitting that was cross-threaded in to the point where it was at an angle. So it leaks, and I couldn't seal it, and I can't get it out. And, you know, the other side that connects to the propane bottle, it's all cross-threaded up. And it's just like, what in the world? So they refunded me some cash so that I can go get some parts down at Home Depot and get the thing running for the boys, get them out there bending some steel. And I was talking to Finn Liam Christie over in Dublin. He's a – oh, God, that man's been blacksmithing for about 40-some years or so. And he told me, like, get them to make leaves. If they can pound out a leaf off just some mild steel and get that shape and that pattern and everything – that, you know, get that technique down before they start doing anything else. That's a good way to do it. Like, okay, cool. And but that goes back to, don't be afraid to ask questions. Doesn't matter who the person is. I mean, I sent an email to Kevin J. Anderson the other day to see about getting a little video promo for LibertyCon. And I just got it in my inbox a few minutes ago. Like, cool. You know, don't be afraid to ask, because you never know what's going to happen when you start asking questions.
That's right.
And it's weird because people actually start talking to you and you don't expect it. And then, you know, weird things happen.
Yeah, you met me by just, you know, reaching out. There you go. I'm like, oh, well, I got to talk to this feller.
Well, you know, when I was first looking at Imaginarium, and I was like, okay, cool. My original plan was to come up to Imaginarium, scope it out, because, you know, I was looking for a home con for Liberty, or for the, not Liberty, for Three Ravens. You know, LibertyCon will always be my home con, but it has a limitation on the cap. There's only so many people going to be there, but it's not even a matter of fandom, because it's a matter of the authors and learning and all that. So it's not really a good home con for the publishing company. So, you know, I've been looking at other possibilities, and it's like, okay, cool, Imaginarium, let's do this. I'm going to scope it out. I'm going to go up there. And, you know, like I said in the original email, I want to work. If I'm not working a con, there's no point in me going, because I'm just not a con goer. I find other things to do. I'm kind of hyper and always busy. but, you know, after the was it Imogen? Is that how you say it?
The Imagine Awards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
The
Imagine
Award. The word gin and imagine. Yeah. It's a little play on words there.
Okay. So, you know, what is it? We've got 7 titles in the final. And then mine and Christopher Wood's Smuggler's Run is in the running too. And she's like, okay, well, that's a game changer. What are we going to do now? Well, we got all these titles in there. We need a table. So, you know, and that's when it's just like, okay, I just need to talk to you people instead of trying to email back and forth. No, I need to talk. And then what was it? We were on the phone for like 3 hours just shooting the shit for a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, every now and then we were talking business, but otherwise we're just BSing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we shut it up. It's so fun. Well, as I said, we have so much in common. And then you're just going to love Imagineering. You're going to fit right in. Daniel, I can't wait till you meet Daniel Dark, the dark one there.
Oh, yes.
You will click with Daniel, too. I mean, you are just going to be like, this is home. This is home.
I don't click nobody. I'm a
I met Daniel on a roof. I'll tell you the story at Imagineering.
Oh, God.
Yeah, literally on a roof. Daniel.
Years ago.
Well, Daniel entered Imagineering for the very first time on a penny farthing bike. I'm not kidding you. The first time I saw Daniel was entering our convention with a penny farthing bike. That's my first encounter with Daniel. That tells you all you need to know.
In a top hat. In a top hat.
In a top
old
hat.
Old Ripper
yes,
guard. Yep, yep. Fun stuff. Fun stuff. But yeah, you're going to have a blast, and I can't wait for the Hillbilly Bingo to come about. If you want to talk a little bit about it, that's going to be fun for our attendees.
Okay. Well, you know, that one is interesting because, you know, I've always wanted to do something to help out the cons. And you know, it started out with LibertyCon because I wanted to do something originally to help LibertyCon and their charity of choice every year. Because if it wasn't for LibertyCon, I wouldn't be where I'm at. I struggled for years to find just the information of how I'm supposed to go about this thing and make it happen. But I never could find anybody that could give me good information because, you know, I was with the Chattanooga Writers Guild for years, and there was so much conflicting information. And lo and behold, it come down to they were literary. I was pulp. And there's some bad blood there with that. But because they knew about LibertyCon, but nobody ever told me about it. And I just got lucky one year, and the inspector, I was working as a design engineer for a boiler company, and the inspector happened to be part of the staff for LibertyCon, and just as we were talking, he told me about it, like, so I went. And, man, I tell you what, that first LibertyCon, the switch flipped in the back of my head. I got permission. I went to Charity Ayers' little writing workshop. And in that little 15-minute writing session and all this and that, you know, we got to read out our little 15-minute blurb thing that we wrote. In that 15 minutes, she gave me permission. Didn't matter how many times my wife said my stuff was good or anybody else in my family or any of my close friends, this perfect stranger was just gushing over this. And it was honest to goodness, it wasn't a mom answer, and everybody out there should know what a mom answer. If you ask somebody what they think, they're like, "Oh yeah, I think it's really great. It's beautiful." No, that's bullshit. Walk away. That's not a good answer. That's a mom answer. You don't want that. You want somebody that's going to give you real input, good and bad. And you know, that switch flipped, and it's been game on since. I mean, that first convention, I got invited to an anthology. The next year convention, I walked out of there with 3 invites to write novels. And then in the next year, I opened 3 Ravens Publishing. I knocked out my novel, my first novel, and published it in November of 19. And then I knocked out 4 novels in a year. Then last year, well, the pandemic has pretty much been the years of anthologies and short stories and everything else. But in the meantime, I've been building the platform that is 3 Ravens. Now, Okay, back to the Hillbilly Bingo. We went to Fantasy. And, well, no, okay, hold on, back up. All right, so I was originally going to do an actual poker run to do a charity run for LibertyCon to build up some funds and all this and that. And, you know, that one kind of fell apart because of the pandemic and because of they didn't want anybody leaving the con. Like, okay, well, that's understandable. Well, things started building back up. We're planning last year for maybe doing a live show, and we ended up going virtual. But I brought it up that, well, what if we do a poker run in-house to where, you know, at the con suite there's somebody that can stamp a card or draw a card and write it down for what you drew and all that, so whoever at the end has the best hand wins. So, well, that's a good idea, but that means we're going to have people manning stations. It's like, okay, if you can figure out how to do this without extra manpower, then we can do this. And, you know, one of the running jokes at Fantasy was my minions, or my team of minions that were always chasing behind me, and the running gag was, where's Hillbilly? Because anybody out there that doesn't know, I go by my call sign of Hillbilly that was given to me day 3 of boot camp. Most people, military or riding community, know me as that. So the running gag joke was, where's Hillbilly? And, you know, they'd see one of the minions looking around like they were looking for somebody. It's like, oh, he's over there. they'd rat me out in a heartbeat wherever I was. But, you know, it's just like, okay, I got to go here. I got to run back to the table, make sure my people are okay. Anybody need a pee break, all that. Chatting on the way back from Fantasy, and that's where the idea of Hillbilly Bingo kind of got born, wrapped into that whole poker run thing. And, you know, and I've decided that the way I'm going to do this, because of state gambling laws and all that crap, we're doing the Where's Hillbilly side quest, where if you would like to donate to the charity of choice, you can while you're there picking up your card. And there's going to be a prize at the end of it. You know, and you have this little card that you have to catch me in certain places, like after a panel, at the Three Ravens table, in the hallway, outside of the bathroom, not inside the bathroom, you know, and I'll stamp your card. So when you have a bingo, you can go back, put it into the pile, and at the end of the day, we'll do a drawing, and whoever gets drawn out the bag gets the prize for the day. And we'll just have a game of it, you know, where they, you know, kind of like a Where's Waldo, they just got to find me. And, you know, was it, talk to Brandy and talk to you too, Holly, about getting up on stage at opening ceremonies to announce it, and so everybody can see, hey, this is me. Look for me. I'm the weird guy with the braid. And, you know, we'll just have some fun with it.
Yeah, that sounds like a trip.
That sounds awesome. That sounds fantastic. So there you go, yeah. Holly. Yep. Now you know more.
Yeah, we're going to be working on it up until I got to get you with Matthew Smith, who I was talking about a while back. I got to get you on contact each other and see what he works with the veterans and, you know, the Lexington area and Louisville. He's got contact. So, yeah, I need to definitely get you two hooked up and see if we can't do something, you know, for that group.
Right.
Yeah, he's
in worst case,
you know,
I've got the backup plan on that one, so that's taken care of.
Cool.
I'll just put it to the one that that we use, which is the Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association.
Yeah.
And which anybody out there that ends up picking up a copy of the Origins anthology, the proceeds from that go, it's the first book in the JTF series. The proceeds of that goes to the Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association.
Very nice.
Awesome.
Yeah, and you'll like awesome. Matthew. He's our
great call.
He's our resident. Matthew is our resident Abrams tank driver. Mm-hmm. If we ever have a need for those skills at the event, so, yeah.
Well, I might have to pick his brain.
Yeah.
He's a good guy, and he's got an arsenal of he's a huge 3D printing guy.
3D printer.
A ridiculous farm of 3D printing like devices. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's built about everything. I think he even 3D printed a car engine, if I understand Holly correctly.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, a Ford pickup. Yeah, engine.
Yeah.
But yeah, have you ever thought about like doing a game, developing a game, William, from your books?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I can't remember the name of the convention. Mel Todd had mentioned this one convention out in Vegas where all these big, you know, like Blizzard and Netflix and all of them come together and they're shopping IPs. And they've got booths set up and you go and you start presenting yourself. And I've seriously considered going out there. I got to get a few more ducks in a row and then I'll be set up to do that kind of stuff. But yeah, we've got a couple of series like the JTF. Absolutely. I would love to get that into like a board or a card game set up or a first person shooter for sure. Because I mean, it's mixed military units dealing with supernatural threats on the battlefield and winning with overwhelming force. What part of that doesn't scream first-person shooter?
Right.
And honestly, I thought about hollering at the guy that did Wolfenstein and Doom just because. You know,
Wolfenstein is awesome.
Because how freaking cool would that be? Just to get to talk to the dude.
My God.
You know, he changed our gaming experience, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I used to watch my son Noah play Wolfenstein. I assume he still got it. I haven't seen him play it for a while. He's stuck on Elden Ring, but and Destiny.
Yeah,
he used to play that a lot.
I used to play Wolfenstein with Metallica. Yeah,
yes.
Metallica Black cranking in the background, or the full Rust in Peace album from Megadeth.
Nice.
Heck yeah.
So, yeah,
Hangar 18.
Yep.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Heck yeah. Balls to the wall.
Yeah, well, yeah. Noah, Holly's son Noah is not your average gamer. He does a lot of beta testing for some companies and whatnot, and he's a really top-level gamer. So, yeah, when you get that ready, you've already got a beta tester for sure. We know one.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's really
good. And he's a Halo king. I mean, He's getting, they're working on a tattoo on his arm right now that is like the creation, you know, when God's reaching down, except it's Halo, and it's Master Chief and Cortana, and they're like reaching for like her chip.
Oh, wow.
It's badass.
Yeah,
it's cool. I'll send you a picture.
It's a lot.
Yeah,
he's definitely getting it done in stages because it's a full project, but pretty cool. So. But, that sounds like, you got some potential for game properties, and that's a good segue to get into your writing, because we have mentioned a number of things about your writing. But, tell us about some of the current novels that you have, and then also ones that are going to be coming out this year, because it sounds like you're pretty prolific.
Oh, I try to be. But, you know, that's part of the game, man. I mean... You know, I went to Superstars back in February, the Superstars Writing Seminar, and the light at the end of the tunnel is so much brighter after that. There was so much validation of everything that I've been doing on the writing and the publishing side, and the networking alone, that was well worth it. I mean, I got to sit down for about 2 hours talking to IPs with Kevin J. Anderson. You know, just
very
sitting down
nice.
And talking over beers, you know. How cool is that?
Nice.
And,
awesome.
You know, so, this year I've got to get at least two novels out. Like I said, I'm working on the JTF 13 novel right now, the modern day one. Next on the list is either going to be Shepherd's Call, which is going to be the first book in the Black Wish universe, or book two of Flux Runners. It depends on what the mind squirrels are screaming at me about at that time. But I got to get JTF done first. My goal is to get it out before Dragon. because I got invited to Dragon Con as a attending professional. So that's another game changer.
Definitely.
But okay, my first novel, Flux Runners. If you love Firefly and you like the underdogs just trying to make their way through the universe, you're going to dig the chaos that is Flux Runners. You've got a mining team that's just doing their thing, and they get forced into the situation where they have to do a mission, and they accidentally find themselves on the other side of the galaxy. There are so many freaking Easter eggs in this thing. It is definitely adult humor on a lot of it. One of my friends that read it said that you wrote an entire crew of crew chiefs. Like, yeah, maybe. And, you know, I had to write that and get it out of my system before I could write anything serious, or at least more serious. All the characters, with the exception of just a few, I know the people. They're all Tuckerized. And I took their top one or two personality traits and exaggerated them to 11. And just it's chaos in a box. It really is, but it's a fun little adventure. And I've got 6 books planned in the series along with a number of offshoots. It's just a matter of button seat and getting it done. But you know, that whole day job thing takes a lot of time. My second book was Widowmakers. So World War II, mixed military unit dealing with supernatural threats, which happens to be gremlins this time. And, you know, me being a gearhead and an airplane guy, you know, I turned wrenches on F-15s for 10 years. I was lucky enough that I talked to the people down at the Warner Robins Air Museum, and they let me come down there and turn wrenches on that B-17 that they're restoring. Ooh. And then they let me climb around in an A-26 and on and a B-25, and you know, they just let me have at and play with all the planes, and it was freaking amazing.
I'd imagine
a B-17's bomb bay is a lot smaller than you would think. Oh
really?
My God, that plane is huge, but that bomb bay is small. But you know, part of the research. Go do research. Don't just sit there at the house. Do
right.
the experience. So, you know, I've got a lot of stuff like, you know, about the aircraft in there, the little details. And if I could have gotten up to Reading, Pennsylvania, I was going to go up there and see the P-61 that they've got up there that they're restoring. Because there were spots where I had one of the crew members in the gunner seat. And then one where they were the radar and radio man in the rear. And it's like, okay, how do I describe this? I can't find any images of this back console setup. So what am I looking at? What's his view? And, you know, I just wanted to go sit in the thing. And I offered to go up and turn wrenches. I'm a certified aircraft mechanic. Why can't I go turn wrenches? And that's how I ended up with, you know, getting to play with that B-17. So, you know, I included a bunch of aircraft stuff in there because just it's one of those things I love. Book 3 was Wildcat, Foreclosure of a Dream. the Fallen World series is basically Fallout. my buddy Chris Woods, he came up with the universe, and I was listening through the audiobook on the first one, and I got halfway through chapter 1, and I'm sending him text messages like, dude, how much Fallout 4 have you played? Because it starts out with, you know, you're going down the street and there's all these raiders basically on the corner at the skyscrapers, guarding their territories. Like, it's just like you're walking through Boston in Fallout 4. And the more I got into listening to the book series, the more I was loving it. And I had this idea, and I didn't get into the anthology that they were doing at the time, but he's like, hey, write a novel. Like, okay. So I placed my novel in Southern West Virginia, where I grew up. And the basic premise is the lead character, his wife and child were taken by raiders when everything went to crap.
And now there's word that they're back in the area. So there's hope that he can maybe track them down, because he was knocked unconscious, left for dead kind of thing, and never knew where they went to. But now that somebody's back from that crew, he's hoping that he can track down his wife and his son. So there's this whole side quest where he goes off to go find them. The editor, she's a big Fallout 76 fan. And she was sending me messages like, man, how much Fallout 76 have you played? It's like, none. Well, how do you know all these details about this place and that place? Like, I grew up there.
Right.
So that, you know, that makes a difference.
First-hand knowledge.
I like to drop in knowledge wherever I can. And there's one scene where they're crossing across Blair Mountain, West Virginia. And anybody that doesn't know what Blair Mountain is, the Battle of Blair Mountain is one of the pivotal turning moments when they were trying to establish the mining union, because the coal companies back in West Virginia at that time, you know, they had the market, they had the monopoly. If you worked for the coal company, well, you just sold your soul to the company store, because they'd charge you for everything. You would never get into the black. Battle of Blair Mountain is one of the only times, or actually is the only time, that the American military has fired on civilians. The National Guard was called in. They set up machine gun nests. They had biplanes, and they were dropping bombs out the side of these biplanes and trying to stop this mass of miners on their way to Logan County Courthouse to get the union instated. That's where the term redneck comes from, if nobody knew, because they all wore red bandanas. The term redneck was a good thing at one point. You didn't screw with a redneck, because they'd take you down in a heartbeat. You don't mess with hillbillies. But that's where it comes from. So I threw that bit of knowledge in there, you know, just because. Why not? And I made sure that my path on the map was going through there just so I could throw that in. And my last book, which is actually a finalist for the Sci-Fi Novel Award, I think, Smuggler's Run, that I co-wrote with Christopher Woods, which he's coming to Imaginarium too. If Spaceballs and the Dukes of Hazzard had a love child, well, wrapped in all that is the 80s, you would have Smuggler's Run. It is, dear God, a parody and horribly cheesy B-rate sci-fi. These guys get into so much trouble. But we had fun doing it. And we wrote this novel in under a month. It started out with Chris sent me a chapter, and we were just going to play around with it, and I wrote a chapter back to him, and he sent me a chapter. We wrote five chapters in a day while I was at work at the day job, because it's just like I'm sitting there doing stuff, and I got to wait on the computer to process, so it's like, okay, here's another sentence. And we ended up writing five chapters in a day. But we had that thing finished in under a month. We sat on it for a week or so, had other people look at it and bleed on it, and we went back, did our edit runs, turned it in, and, you know, got that thing rolling. But it was so much fun, because we would leave each other in a predicament that we had to get out of, trying to screw each other over. And it was just, okay, what can I do to mess with him? How's he going to get out of this? Here, screw you. There you go. And, you know, it just became a game. And actually, it's my turn on Smuggler's Quest, which is the follow-up to that. I got to get my chapter done and send it back to Chris here pretty quick. But besides those novels, I mean, I'm in a slew of anthologies, plus my own self-inflicted pain of I've created a bunch of anthologies for Three Ravens, which includes the Trailer Park anthology. God, that one was just fun. But I learned the hard way about doing a doorstop. Don't do doorstops if you're going to do an anthology, because you can only pay people so much when you got to divide it between all the authors.
Right.
And was it June 1st is the deadline for It Came from the Trailer Park Part 2. We're going to do another anthology because it was fun. And I've already got cover art for it. And oh, my God, it's freaking amazing. If you like cheesy B-rate horror creature feature, yeah, this is the kind of thing for you. And
Nice.
It stayed in the top 100 of the horror anthologies Kindle store for months without me doing anything. It was just there. People were loving it. It's weird. And it's one of those, I just looked at the wife. I had the idea. I'm sitting there doing dishes. Like, I want to do this. It came from the trailer park. That would be fun. I want to do it. I don't care if I make any money on it. I just want to do it. And go figure, that's the one it made its money back in like the first weekend versus the Starflight Anthem, where I put all this extra time and effort and money and a lot of extra money into
that's
it to try to promote
it.
It's like, I still haven't made my money back on that one. Like,
Christ. You never know.
Yeah,
that's the thing. You put it out there, and you can't predict people. I don't care what you do. You cannot predict people and what they're going to respond to, you know? And you might throw something out to where you're like, hey, I did this for fun. I don't care if it makes money. And that'll sell your million, your first million,
yeah. You
know? And like you said, the other one that you put everything into, yeah, maybe sell, a couple hundred copies. But yeah, that one that you just don't give a crap. You just had fun and did it for that reason. Yeah, that'll be your million seller. It's just an odd thing, but that's just
and,
society.
It stayed up there in the charts, and it's like I think it was 124 when I looked at it earlier. It's still sitting there.
Nice.
Like, wow.
That's a good position. You think of the millions of books that are out there.
Yeah. It's just crazy. Mm-hmm. And, it took 3 orange tags in the opening weekend, including the overall for the horror anthologies category. Not just the new release. It took the overall in the store. So it was like,
wow.
What?
Nice. Aww. Yeah, congrats on that. That's awesome. Yeah, because anthologies are not always the easiest to sell a lot of as compared to, like a series novel or something like that. I mean, it's definitely not always, the big seller of a press. So that's impressive that you had a real big one with that. That's awesome.
Yeah. And just cause it's fun. And we chalked it up to, it's just stupid humor and people needed to laugh. People needed something lighthearted. Because, the last couple of years have been crap. So, who doesn't love Shaun of the Dead or Army of Darkness or Bubba Hotep? Because that's really what that falls into is that vein of creature feature comedy. Was it Dell and Tucker versus Evil? That's another one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Another good one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that a lot. Yeah, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think, this is the week that the Evil Dead video game gets released. I think it's Friday. I think Noah was mentioning it. But
yeah.
I didn't know that.
The new Evil Dead game. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, new Evil Dead video
looks
game.
Looks like it's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. That
well,
that
one day we'll be playing a William Joseph Roberts game. We'll be playing
a
Ravens game.
That would
That's
be cool.
And that would be totally badass. And yes, I hope I get to fly one of them fighter jets. That was always a dream of mine as a kid. And then of course it got too dang big anyway, so it wouldn't have happened. But back then women weren't allowed to fly, so I was strike. But I went into nursing instead. But yeah, I always loved the fighter jets. I found them quite amazing. I still do.
Don't have it armed though, William, if you send her up in a fighter jet, because Holly would be dangerous with an armed fighter jet.
Darn right. I don't play. I would take care of a lot of things real quick.
Oh man, that's too funny.
I should be voted in as dictator, and the world would be purged of idiocracy.
Oh man, but now one of the things I think is cool, and it relates a little bit to some of the topics that you're doing in Imaginarium, but you have such a cool range of interests, and I mentioned the ones you're doing Imaginarium. I think what is it, Holly? Fermentation? Is that one of the topics that Wayne's doing at Imaginarium?
Oh yeah, I'm doing a fermentation panel.
I definitely want to come to that.
which I still got to figure out, okay, what am I bringing? Do I need to bring samples? What's allowed at the convention center? All that kind of stuff. So I'll get with you about that later. Because I, okay, you know, I got to make sure and prep for all the workshops that I'm doing.
But Holly, I was thinking
I've never tried to make
a little bit about the interests, though. So, some of the stuff that, yeah, you can relate it to the ones he's doing in Imaginarium if you want to. But yeah, he's got such a cool range of stuff as far as his other pursuits with blacksmithing and
yes, and the mountain medicine.
All kinds of stuff.
The mountain medicine is going to be a neat panel.
Yeah,
I just added panelists to that with you today. I actually had somebody that wanted to get in on it. I was like, well,
oh, that's cool.
You'll love that.
Yeah,
so I actually
and like I said, you want to slap me into some other panels? I'm fine with that. I want to work the con.
Hey, Steve is always like, oh, they should never tell you that. They should.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah,
like, hey,
very
don't threaten me for good time. You tell me more, I'll do it. I ain't afraid. I'll do it. I'll put some more on there.
You already know by now, I ain't afraid. Bring it on.
No, you ain't. You ain't. You're like, I'm all for it. I'll ride around. That's why I got minions for.
You know, that's like I was saying at the start. I have never been a con goer. My first con was Liberty Con.
Oh,
I've
wow.
never been one to care about going and seeing celebrities or meeting them or anything like that. It's like, okay, well, I've got other things to do.
Right. That's why Imaginarium is going to be such a shock to you because we're so different because we don't do the cattle calls. You know, you don't have to stand in line and pay an extra $150 to get your picture taken, you know, with a celebrity or nothing. All of our people, you've got to, you can ask them questions. They're very approachable. They're very nice. We make sure of that, you know, ahead of time. I won't work with assholes. I just won't. And so, you know, they enjoy being mentors, and they enjoy talking about their craft, and they want to be helpful. And, you know, most of them have that mentality. Obviously, if you want to be successful, you have to help others. That's just the way it is.
You know, I keep telling all the younger authors I come across and, you know, some of my peers, like, why would you ever invest any time into somebody that doesn't want to take a few minutes to tell you things and help you along your journey?
Right.
You know, because if they're that uppity and they got their nose so far up in the air that they think their crap don't stink, why are you bothering with them? Nope.
Right.
There's plenty of other authors that are mid-list or better that have no problem with sitting down and talking to you and helping to guide you.
Sharing.
They got their own stuff, and they're not going to be able to hold your hand the entire way, but they can at least point you in the right direction and you know, bounce ideas every now and then. But that goes back to the...
We all started from somewhere, right? We've all been there. So, you know, of course, we want to help others in that same situation.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, another bit of advice for any of the newbies. One, ask questions. If you're the person that you want to ask the question to is one of the higher-ups or, you know, one of your heroes or whatever, don't put them on that pedestal. Just treat them like a regular, everyday person that you're talking to. Because as soon as you put them on that pedestal, it's a whole different dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
The conversation will take a different turn versus if you just talk to them like a regular person, they're going to be more receptive because it's not just that, oh, okay, it's a fan. All right. You know, it's a whole other conversation you can have with them. You know, I've talked to some of these upper-end authors and stuff like that. And, yeah, in the back of my head, I'm squeeing like a little schoolgirl. But I'm not doing it right there with them as I'm having the conversations.
Right on. I do that very often. Mm-hmm.
Treat them just like another person because that's all they are, man.
That's it. And, yeah, you can – of course we're going to – everyone, even those individuals that you are – fanboy or girlin' after, they have someone too that they looked up to, you know.
Oh yeah.
So we're all human. We all have those same emotions, and you got to realize, you know, that's why you don't have to be nervous around them. And that's why I'm not scared to talk to anybody. I'll email anybody. I don't care. People wouldn't believe the people I talk to. Because what are they going to do? You tell me no. That's all they can do.
Misfits of Magic anthology that I set up, Fantasy, Pierce Anthony did the opening essay for me. The Blood, Sweat, and Steel anthology that's coming up, due date in September, David Drake wrote the opening essay for me. Tomorrow's Hope, hard sci-fi, due December. Les Johnson and Arlen Andrews are doing the opening essays for me. All because
nice.
I asked.
Right.
If you don't ask a question, the answer is always going to be no. And
Arlen's very approachable.
Don't answer you, you're out an email. Oh, well,
mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah. Minutes.
That's another thing. You know, if you don't have thick skin, you need to get it, because being in this industry, you need to understand that people mark on your stuff for a reason, because it needs to be looked at and needs to be adjusted. If you actually reach out and get somebody to bleed on your stuff, expect to get marks back, unless you just want mom answers. And if all you want is mom answers, then you're just wanting chest thumping, and you're not trying to become a professional. You're a hobbyist. Go away. You know, grow some thick skin and get ready to hear no. Get ready to hear that your stuff is not perfect, because it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I bled on the latest novel for an upper-end author that is New York Times bestseller and all this and that. Just recently bled on it. The same stupid mistakes that I make and others that I know make were in this manuscript. We all make those mistakes. We all, the forest for the trees. We forget to put words in because our brain put it in there, but we didn't type it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
We all
do
this.
Sure.
And this is from a New York Times bestselling author, multiple New York Times bestselling author. And they had all these mistakes in there. So don't think your shit don't stink, because it does.
That's right. 100%.
So, yeah, grow some thick skin and be ready.
By just reaching out to close family or friends that are going to blow smoke up your ass, that's not going to help you level up at all.
No.
You need to reach out to people that are going to be brutally honest with you, good or bad.
Yeah. And, you know, that also goes to another good point when it comes to the writing community and this writer's journey. Writing groups can be good, but writing groups can be detrimental. I was in a number of writing groups here in Chattanooga, and it was more chest thumping and look what I can do kind of thing than helping each other to raise up. Look for writing groups in your area, but check them out, see what they're doing, see what they're capable of doing. If people are willing to bleed on each other's stuff, you know, that's cool. But if it becomes the same thing every month where nobody's really progressing, you're just bleeding on the same thing every month, you need to look at it and evaluate, is it worth your time? Back when I was part of the Writers Guild, they had a fiction group, but they didn't have a science fiction fantasy. So I started a science fiction fantasy, and we just emulated the other writing groups. So we were doing the same kind of thing month after month, and then life, cancer, things like that happened, and I had to stop that and, take care of home life stuff. But back in September of 2019, I was at the Next Chapter Con over here in Ringgold, and a number of my old writing group members were there. It's like, hey, when are we going to start the group up again? It's like, I really don't want to do that, because all we did was spin our wheels and we never got anywhere. What's the point? It's a waste of time. And I started thinking about it, and I have a bad habit of wanting to give back, but
that's
if I have to raise up another, then, you know, I'm not even worried about karma, but, you know, it just, it's a good thing. You know, just got to help out people. But I got to thinking on it, and it's like, well, if we did it, let's not do it as a writing group. Let's not do it as a critique group. Let's do it as a support group. So we were going to help each other to find things, you know, find, like, here's these writing opportunities and here's these anthologies and this and that. We're going to share this information together so that we can all take a step up. And we took it one step further, and the Corner Scribblers writing group here in Chattanooga have produced quarterly flash fiction collections. The last 2 years? Yeah, we're on year three now. Wow. Okay. But look, just little flash fiction collections to help hone our craft, to put something out there. You know, it looks good on our author accounts, but it's another little something that can go on the shelf, and that little thing on that shelf will help to build that brain, not work, words. Words are evil. make them feel good. Get them the next step up, you know. Give them that encouragement to do that next thing, because they can sit there and look at that piece on the shelf that they already did. And so instead of just critiquing each other's crap, we're actually producing stuff and producing collections. Four times a year, we did two big anthologies, one for Halloween, which is the Children of the Corner, and we did the Napkin Notes themed anthology, where every story started out with somebody was scribbling something on the corner of a napkin, and then the stories just took off from there. But it's been productive. One of the he's not really young. One of the baby authors, from what his writing was when we started to what it is now, oh my God, it is leaps and bounds so much better. He has grown in his style. You know, everybody has grown, and we do the edits. Once all the stories are submitted, we all go through Google Drive where we stash the files, and we all take our turn bleeding on each of the stories. So as you're going through, you can see what other people's catching. So now you're looking at things like that, and you're catching other things in your editing. So, you know, we're growing as a group. And, you know, these things are only up for like 99 cents on KDP and stuff. They're not making a lot, but I got to pay everybody out last quarter, like 10 bucks a piece or something like that, because it finally earned up enough. But, you know, it's the little thing. It really is, especially when you're down at the bottom, you know, just like, you know, doing that little writing course with Charity. It was that little thing. The look on her face was what flipped that switch. She fell in love with that story and that scene that I painted for her, and you could see it in her eyes. And that's all it took. So it was that little thing, man.
Mm-hmm. All right. It's the little things in life, as we always say. That's the truth.
But those little steps, those little baby steps, they become leaps eventually.
Yep. That is so true. You never know where it's going to lead.
Yep, exactly.
Nope. Nope.
Procrastination. I mean, not procrastination.
not procrastination.
That ain't the word. See, words are evil. See, that's my squirrel. That's my squirrels in my brain. Spits out all kinds of things. No, you've got to stay persistent. Persistence is the word I was wanting to spit out. Yeah.
Okay.
Persistently procrastinate, or is that what you're saying?
Persistently patient, which I have like no patience, but I am persistent.
There's something else. Back when I was doing my original podcast, the TDB Pirate Radio, one of my first interviews that I did on there, and it was set up like a starving artist podcast, where I wanted the upper tier to share information to the lower guys so they could, you know, get a leg up. And it was my distraction. I wasn't writing. I was podcasting instead. I learned a lot of what to do and what not to do. I thought it was my way of promoting myself when I had nothing to promote yet. But one of my first interviews was Ben Bova. And he just flat out said, if you're going to do it, do it. Stop talking about it and do it. Set your schedule, and that's mm-hmm. when you do it. And because of that mm-hmm. man and his words, I get up at 0400 every morning. Unless I'm just sick, dead tired, exhausted, I'm up at 0400. Coffee's ready. I sit down, I start writing. My writing time is 04 to 06, and at 06 I clock in. Because I'm, you know, luckily I'm working from home and I can just clock in, walk across the room, and there it is.
Right.
But
that helps.
Yeah, that if you're going to do it, stop talking about it. And you know, NaNoWriMo is a good thing, but it's also a bad thing. It kind of enables. Like, why do you just wait to November to write? Write all year long. Write any time that you got it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also the mm-hmm. difference between the professional and the hobbyist mentality.
Right.
Daniel, and nothing wrong with being a hobbyist.
Daniel's always said, you know, even if you're a wrestler or something, you think of something, write it on a napkin, write it on whatever, you know,
yeah.
just write every day.
Yeah. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a hobbyist if that's where you want to be. But
right.
if you want to talk about being a writer and this and that, but you're not trying to write, then, yeah, you know. And I've run into more than a few, and I'm sure everyone out there has run into those kind of people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I lost my train.
I wonder why they're not getting anywhere. You got to put pen to paper.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or keystroke.
And you have
to
read. Oh, do you read? Please tell me you read.
Who, me?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah.
Thank
I mean,
we
I
tell
read
people
more.
Over and over. You'd be surprised at how many writers
yeah,
don't read.
Writers
and it's like,
never read. It blows
yeah,
me away.
Well, now see, I read like, more submission stuff than other things, but, you know, whenever I can, I'll listen to an audiobook. You gotta read for the influence. And okay, I made the mistake yep. of there was about 15 years that I didn't do any enjoyment reading. It was all research reading. It was history. It was, you know, how you do this, how you do that. Because when I started on my fantasy novel, I'd caught myself writing The Breaking of the World. And mm-hmm. I don't know if I wrote that before or after I had actually started reading Eye of the World. You know, Robert Jordan's first book in the Wheel of Time series, which he wrote in The Breaking of the World. And that's when I stopped reading. But I realized the mistake after about 15 years, and I got back into audiobooks and things like that, and I've devoured everything that I can get my hands on. Because I definitely absorb audio better than reading print, because I'm one of those, I have to read a paragraph like three times for it to sink in. Which sucks. But, yeah, I read everything that I can get a hold of. When I was at Fantasy, we got to do the tour over at the Bane main office, and they gave us boxes to go to grab what we wanted off the shelves. So we came home. We drugged the back of the truck on the pavement coming out of the parking lot at Bane because we had so many books in the back. Oh my God! It was like kids in a candy store. Okay, here's
so you're
a box.
To read Pals of Mountain like the rest of us.
Oh God! And you know, Chris Woods, he's a carpenter, handyman by trade, and he's been doing some side work here and there in between writing, and he's building me some shelves for in the living room because I'm out of shelf space again, and he's making a lot of big cedar shelves for me just because I need the space.
Oh, that's awesome.
Daniel, do you have any questions, honey?
I don't know too many authors that don't need more book space.
So
except for the ones that I was talking about that don't read.
Well, yeah. And, you know, what makes it worse?
Mind-boggling how you can sit there and you can write in a category that, you know, especially you don't even read that category.
Right.
Well,
and,
you know,
mm-hmm. you know, we've all talked to, you know, different ones that, you know, I'm writing, you know, this book here. I said, you know, is that a category that you read? No. Why do you want to write about it then?
Right.
Right.
Well, now it all depends on what kind of story do you want to tell, and you know, there are so many possible influences. Reading all these different genres is a good thing. If you just read one type, okay, if all you're doing is reading the Dresden Files, well, you're not going to have influence from this or that or that. And, you know, pull in a little bit of Lovecraft for that dark edginess. You know, read some Matthew Riley or some Jonathan Mayberry to pull in those action sequences and see how their sentence structures are set up to make that pacing faster and keep that thing rolling in the action bits. You know, you can incorporate so many different styles and bits and pieces from different authors. It's not stealing. There's only 7 stories in the entire world. We're all telling the
Correct.
Same story. It's the window dressing that we're
mm-hmm.
changing.
Right.
So, you know,
you're not plagiarizing. You are getting inspiration. You already
right.
know the story that you want to write. It's already in your head. It's already, you know, you've already given it space in your head. And
yeah.
this just gives you some inspiration or a, you know, you have a mind block somewhere and be like, oh yeah, I could take it for a spin like this. You know, you get ideas. That's how we build each other up as a society. That's how we get better as a society. And that's what we've done for thousands of years.
Yeah.
That's how the craft gets better and better and more refined.
Well, it's like people ask me why do I give out, you know, what my, you know, books that I haven't even started really are about. And I'm like, it doesn't matter because they're not going to write the same book I'm going to write anyway.
No, not unless they're copying you word for word.
But they're plagiarizing, yeah.
Well, those influences too. It's not just books. I mean, it could be video games. It could be, you know, TV shows. You know, the post-apocalyptic stuff that I did for the Last Brigade Universe for Bill Webb. And that one, you know, it's hard military sci-fi. And I had a really hard time trying to sit down and figure out what I was going to write for it when he invited me to it. And we got on a call. We talked for about 2 or 3 hours. And then it finally hit me. It's like, I'm not writing. I don't have to write hardcore military unit stuff. I can write post-apocalyptic because he's got nobody writing in this interim years. Because it's like his main storyline takes place 70 years after everything goes to crap. Well, if I put it into 3 years after, well, now that's a whole different story. I'm playing post-apocalyptic then. That's my little bag. So, you know, and playing Fallout and playing like Far Cry 5, that inspired so much in the stories that I was writing for the Last Brigade. I've got one storyline that I was working up about basically some space miners, and they're doing all these little things here and there to try to make a buck and get by. But most of what was going on in there was inspired by the Peaky Blinders. And if you hadn't seen that TV series on
yeah.
Netflix, oh, my God, go watch it.
Love it.
You know,
love it.
Just the way that they had their structure set up and the characters were interacting and, you know, just that style. But I put it to more, you know, I tied in like West Virginia coal miners with the Peaky Blinders and, you know, they're mm-hmm. escaping from this situation. It was originally, the original idea was set down for the Fallen Empire that John Holmes is doing through Cannon Publishing. But that's probably going to end up going into my Flux Runners universe eventually. But, you know, it's like, you know, you take West Virginia coal miners, tie them in with the Peaky Blinders with this whole mob mentality kind of thing. and you know, start the moonshine running, and they're just doing odd jobs to make a buck, and sending everything they can back home to take care of things. And you know, inspiration can come from anywhere. It really can. I've told this story more than a few times. You know, me and the wife, we were still dating at the time. We went to Applebee's for dinner one night, and we're just sitting there, we're talking, and I look over at the bar, and there's this one lady and her two friends, and something about this one lady started the squirrels. And I'm sitting there looking around, trying to find pen, paper. You know, she went out to the car to get a pad of paper. I ended up stealing an ink pen from the waitress, and I started jotting down all these notes about this woman. And I couldn't hear their conversation, but it was all a matter of the body language, the way she was carrying herself, mm-hmm. the way she was telling whatever story it was that she was telling. She just became
a
sub bad guy, you know, a mini boss in the story that I was going to write, just because of her actions and her interaction with her friends. So, you know, inspiration comes from anywhere. Always carry your pen and paper with you.
It's true.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you're an observer.
Yeah.
A good author is also an observer. You do hear things in public, or you watch people. Me and Steve, we get so tickled. Where were we the other day? We were people watching. I don't remember.
It was...
I don't remember where we were.
Noah took you to Golden Corral, and it was a smorgasbord of observation.
For Mother's Day, that place was packed, and there were some characters in there, because these usually fights, you know, on the internet from people at Golden Corral. So we were just waiting.
Or Chuck E. Cheese.
But, yeah.
Usually Chuck E. Cheese or Golden Corral. Yeah, that's where the fights all take place.
Yeah, but you have to be an observer, you know, because you don't know when you can say, hey, I remember that person doing this or looked like this or said this, and you throw that in your book.
That's awesome.
You know, just to get some character descriptions, I still had a Match.com account because it was right after we had started dating and all this and that, and I just browsed through all the accounts. And it's like, ooh, that's an interesting picture. That's an interesting picture. You know, this guy looks like a dwarf. And, you know, and I just downloaded a crap ton of profile pictures because they looked interesting. And, you know, every now and then I'll pull that thing up and I'll just start scrolling through to see what I can find. It's like, ooh, okay, yeah, that's what I need. You know, because just looking at somebody can inspire a character or a scene or something.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
There's your mind fills in the blanks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome. Right, yeah, that definitely. Right. Well, we wanted to give you a chance to tell folks where to find both yourself for your writing and also for Three Ravens Publishing. So go ahead and give out your linkage, social media, all that kind of good stuff.
Well, I am pretty much on every social media platform there is, including TikTok, if you didn't catch that at the start. You can find me at williamjosephroberts.com, or you can look up threeravenspublishing.com, both of which are everywhere. I've got at least 15, 16 social media accounts just because I'm trying to spread the word. But, you know, it works.
Awesome.
And then, you know, look us up on Amazon.
Yeah. And Holly, is there anything else that you were wanting to cover before we wrap tonight's episode up?
Have you thought about, I had one question that I wanted to get in. Have you thought about writing a memoir about like your experiences, you know, in the military and, you know, living out there like you do, and your fermentation and your, you know, just all the different things that you learned over the years?
I have not, but I hate you now.
I gave you
good job,
Holly. That's what we do here.
Yeah, that was just gonna have to go on the list now.
Yep, nonfiction. Here we come. Well, I guess you could enter for that category next Imagine Awards. See, you can enter that nonfiction.
And anybody out there that's looking for anthologies to submit to, look at Three Ravens Publishing. The submission guidelines are up at the top menu bar. The open call link is at the top of the menu bar. Go take a look at it. We got a couple of things still open for the year that are coming up. Submit something.
There you go. We usually have people ask.
Yeah.
All right.
About, you know, if we know somebody that, you know, has submissions open, and anthologies is big one.
Yeah, definitely. Follow up on that, writers.
Mm-hmm.
Most definitely. And is there anything that we have not brought up tonight that you were itching to talk about or highlight? I want to make sure you get everything in you want to.
There's so much crap going on. Well, definitely check out the latest release. The Raven and the Crow, the Gray Throne audio just dropped this week. Links are up on the Three Ravens site and in all the social media pages. Definitely, if you think you've got what it takes, check out the Trailer Park Anthology. The next one's due July 1st. That's really the major things that we got going on right now. So just keep checking in. Sign up, you know, subscribe to the newsletter so you can keep track of what we got going on.
Well, it sounds like, yeah, you're the kind of fellow that we need to have back on a regular basis because you got so much going on. We're going to need to have you back just to keep us up to date. So,
yeah.
That's a good problem. That's a good problem.
I'll be glad to jump on and talk.
And we'll have to do a show just purely about metal, too.
Yeah.
But that'll be for our show.
I can still talk about that. Oh, if you didn't know, the Who is coming to Chattanooga.
Nice. Yeah, I did
so
not
the,
know that.
Look up the signal in Chattanooga. They just announced that the Who are coming.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
That's excellent. Well, that's a positive note to round up the episode. What's that, Daniel?
Who's going first?
God, you're going down that path. No, bad.
No, bad.
And we're talking about the metal band, Mongolian throat singing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah, the Who, yes. But, thanks for joining us tonight. I've been looking forward to talking with you for a little bit, for a while, and certainly I'll be keeping up with the date on all your activities and looking to Imaginarium for quite an adventure that weekend. Should be fun with the hillbilly bingo and everything else going on. That's gonna be fantastic.
Yeah, we're going to have a blast with that. And, you know, the test run's going to be at LibertyCon here in just a few weeks, so we can work out any bugs that we got with it. But it'll be a blast.
Yeah, tell Cordova I said hi. Yeah, I will definitely said hi. And, I'll turn it over to you for a final statement, William, and then Holly and Daniel can take us out. But, yeah, from my end, thanks for listening, everybody, and be back at you next Wednesday with a great featured guest at 9 p.m. on Wednesday. So over to you, William, for any final comments, and then Holly and Daniel, take us out.
Put your butt in the seat and actually write. Stop talking about it and do it, because it's never going to get freaking done if you don't freaking do it.
That's true.
All right,
thank
Holly.
Thank you so much for being on the show tonight. It was great. You have to come back. It's always a hoot. We've had a ball. But y'all join us next Wednesday night, 9 p.m., same place, same time. And I'll turn it over to Daniel.
Here on the Star Chamber, we try to bring you the best of the best when it comes to the creatives out there. And I think you heard of a few new books that you may not have heard about before, and a few anthologies that it sounds like must reads for anybody that wants to read that those anthologies. And you got good tips tonight with all the different things that were going on. You were brought tips on how to become a professional writer, how to become a professional creative, and reach out to people that you respect in your industry to find out, what they know, because they may be able to give you that one nugget that launches you into stardom. Be creative and be good to yourself and good to others. Until we talk again next week, this is Daniel Dark signing off.